The Internet, the final frontier.
Well, hello. On today's episode, we review an actual print comic. That'll be fun. I review my top five male singers of all time. And also, Colin will give you our top 10 best horror movies. I'm Justin Eisenstein.
I'm Colin Kakinis.
And I'm Sean Hope.
And you just got to the good part. Strap in and sit tight, because we are boldly going nowhere. Welcome to episode 33 of Boldly Going Nowhere. We got a lot of stuff to get to today, so we're going to get right into it. The very first thing we're going to do is review a comic that was given to me at SPX. And we have waited a while to get to this, but we've had other stuff going on. So, this is Bellanova Red Star, Space Girl, 4199, At the Edge of the Universe, which comes to us from our friend Lee Brettschneider and Justin Peterson of Adventuring Company. So, right off the bat, I am going to say that I really like this comic, and not just because we're trying to get in good with this guy.
Yeah, and not because it was free either. This comic is actually genuinely entertaining.
Yeah.
Probably one of the funnier comics I've actually read in a while.
Samantha LaFountain of BleedingCool.com said it was a blend of hilarious storytelling with clean, stylized artwork.
Yes.
What I would describe it as is reading an episode of your favorite Adult Swim cartoon.
I'd go with that.
Yeah, definitely. A lot of the themes, like this, the crazy randomness and, that poke at awkward, just awkward situations.
Yeah, it's definitely geared towards the older audience, that Adult Swim. Panders
too. Oh yeah, this is
not for kiddies.
Not a comic for children, but just in terms of both the art style and the art style, I would say very reminiscent of, say, maybe C-Lab or
Aqua Teen.
It's a little bit of Aqua Teen, but in terms of the humor too, as we've described, there's a lot of crass humor, but also I thought a lot of things that I thought were really clever, namely the fact that this is issue 379, and the description on the cover is "Trapped on an Alien Planet Again."
Now,
part one.
Yes. Now, for those who have not listened to the Adventuring Company episode, the Lee Brettschneider episode, if you haven't, pause this episode, go listen to it now.
Well, wait.
It's only 40 minutes of your time. Not like if you're listening to us now, not like you don't have the time to listen to us then.
Go forth. And yes. Listen.
But he does explain that this was done as a one-shot originally, but Bellanova Red Star is actually going to be brought back as a webcomic, and they are going to be slowly working their way towards issue 379, is that?
Yeah, this is issue 379, so it's interesting that he starts you off as if you're already familiar with this character.
Well, and also
there's no backstory described here. There's really no explanation of what's going on. It just starts out with Bellanova on her ship about to crash, and her ship has a computer, which is called Astro, A-S-S-T-R-O, which I don't believe they explain what that acronym stands for. And
I don't really think they need to.
No, nor do they need to. And Bellanova she's a spunky chick, but she's also got a bit of a temper. And this gets her into a bit of trouble because she's reckless.
I would say the best way I can describe it, I'd call it Lana Kane from Archer meets Duck Dodgers in the 23rd and a half century.
I like that.
Yeah.
Which is, of course, a parody of Buck Rogers in the 21st century, but apparently you went straight to Duck Dodgers. Which, who can blame you?
I like Duck Dodgers.
So, Bellanova on this planet, she needs an energy source for her ship called Orphan Crystals. But Orphan Crystals are incredibly fragile.
Orphan Crystals.
Yeah, Orphan Crystals.
Yeah. Keep up with the program, Sean.
Did they ask for more?
Well, The problem is, they're so fragile that just the slightest touch will shatter it instantly into a million pieces.
They call me Mr. Glass.
I was going to say, don't you know that about orphan crystals?
Yeah, didn't the they teach you that in like
the slightest touch
8th grade science class?
The slightest touch will cause them to shatter.
The touch, the feel of orphan.
Wow.
Of orphans. That's going to sound terrible out of context.
Yeah. Yeah.
No, it sounds pretty terrible in context too. So
yeah, so obviously the humor value of her quest to get these orphan crystals derives from the fact that she could not be any less delicate. Like, she's the least delicate person you could possibly imagine. So she says, fuck it, I'm going to outside to collect these crystals with extreme delicacy. So we're not going to get into, like going through every page or discussing every point of the plot, because that would ruin the comic for you.
Let's just say it don't go well.
But things don't exactly work out well for her. And she meets up with these alien creatures, and things get a little wacky when she gets captured and thrown in jail with this other space captain who's been sitting there for a really long time. A really, really long time. 300... Oh, that's actually not that long. 300 days.
That's almost a year.
I guess that's not even a year.
Oh, yeah, because, you know, not even a year in captivity. That doesn't seem long at all.
I bet I could do 300 days.
No, you couldn't.
I could do 300 days in this alien prison. What makes you say that, Colin?
Do you really want me to go into this on air?
I mean, I think it'd be entertaining. You don't think I've got the necessary survival skills.
You're petite.
That means I use less energy.
You're pliable.
That means I can fit into spaces that precisely other people cannot.
Oh, geez.
Right, I can escape easier. I'm smaller. I can slip through the bars.
Or you could bend in the shower room in places that you never thought possible.
We're talking about in solitary. There's no other people here.
Someone's totally going somewhere.
Yeah, I was going to say, because you'd luck out and get put in solitary.
We're talking about a specific incident of being in this alien prison. No, if you were to throw me in a federal or state penitentiary with a bunch of other dudes, no, I probably wouldn't fare too well. I'm talking about if I'm a space captain.
Okay,
on my own vessel.
So if we're talking about this similar scenario that Bellanova finds herself in, if you were thrown into a cell with another dude who hasn't seen another human being in 300 days.
No, in this case, I'm him. I'm the one who hasn't seen another human being in 300 days.
Obviously, you need to specify.
I'm saying I would have done better than him. That's what I'm saying.
Right. Now that you've specified.
Right. Look, you're getting me off topic, but the point is the comic is pretty awesome. Lee, I apologize that this review may or may not have done nothing to gain you any new readers.
But you're still awesome, though.
You're still,
it's
awesome.
Still awesome.
We love the comic, and I'm it pretty sure our enthusiasm awesome. is gonna shine through in an audio format.
Shine on, you crazy diamond.
Yes, shine on, you crazy diamond, Bellanova Red Star, Space Girl
41. You crazy diamond named Neil.
Sean, you interrupted my... I was reading the title of the comic.
Oh, sorry.
Bellanova Red Star.
Over.
She's hitting me. Abuse. I need an adult.
Shine on, you crazy diamond, Bellanova.
I'm now using the comic to beat Sean with, and I can also say that's another plus in this comic's favor. It's very good whacking...
TWSS. That is what she said. It's very good whacking.
I was going to say it was very good whacking material, but
I'm sorry. Between pages 3 and 4,
I'm sure you
particularly
want to go
stuck
that statement on the radio.
The lady looks quite attractive, and it's just
okay.
And all right.
Moving on. We want to say thanks to Lee Brett Schneider for this copy of Bellanova Red Star Space Girl 4199 at the edge of the universe. Yes,
I know what you meant. And you said what I meant.
We appreciate it. Anyway, Lee, we want to thank you for the comic. It's hilarious. It's enjoyable. Go to adventuringcompany.com if you want to find out more.
Yeah, Sarah's was awesome, and please give us more. Okay, moving on. Before we get into the meat of the show, we got to give a real quick shout-out to one of our Podomatic brothers.
One of our bros.
Yes.
Because we are bros.
Alex and Jake of the... Well, formerly it was the Alex and Jake Gone Wild, but now it's the Pragmataphobia podcast.
Pragmataphobia?
Yeah.
Pragmataphobia.
Pragmataphobia.
I'm not sure what that is. Hopefully they'll explain it. Because to me, pragmataphobia sounds like the fear of being practical. Like, you know, pragmatic. Pragmatic means you're practical.
Right.
And they are afraid of that. But if it says, if you fear reality and love your gaming / internet / movies and everything else, give me a listen.
So, well, we do love that, so shout out to them.
Yeah, but the reason I want to give them a shout out also, besides the fact that they gave us one, is that they're only 15. And I'm like, cool.
Are get they it. Australians too?
I think they sound like they're Kiwis.
Yeah. Oh.
They sound like they're in New Zealand.
They sound squishy?
Oh, they're from New Zealand.
That's
okay.
Based on the accent, I think they're from New Zealand.
You mean you didn't check the site? Like,
it honestly doesn't say.
It doesn't say?
Yeah.
Well, hey, guys, next time, please give us, you know, an idea of where you're at so we know culturally how to shout out to you.
Well, I mean, we don't, like, tell everyone that we're Americans. We don't
feel
the
need
to do. Whatever.
Well, so, it's faintly obvious that we're Americans.
Why?
We spent like half a podcast talking about food.
That could only happen here.
Yeah.
Talking about a breakfast that was from a hotel.
It was delicious.
So,
it was delicious. I'm not denying its deliciousness. I'm just saying that's American.
So, all right. Good on you guys. You guys are sweet as, to use some Kiwi slang. Also, if it turns out they're Australian, I'm going to feel like a real dick.
Okay, well, if you're Australian, thank you. If you're Australian, thank you. If you're not Australian and you're New Zealand or you're from a Pacific Rim country, we apologize if we got it wrong. Just let us know so we can correct ourselves in a future.
You should do
episode.
A whole job on that Pacific Rim so you can call it a... Never mind.
Nope.
See, you know, here we are trying
Shut
to tonight, and you got to drop that. What's wrong with you?
Abort. Shut it down.
Drop it.
Anyway.
All right, so let's get into music. I'm going to do my top five this week, which means there's a sound effect that goes right here.
Hey, top five songs about death. Allure's Dad tribute list.
Thank you, Jack Black. I will not be talking about songs about death, but I appreciate your input. Today I'm going to talk about my top five male singers. Because I think it's pretty important to distinguish between males and females.
So I'm assuming next week will be females.
You guessed correctly.
Awesome.
Great.
Yeah, next week and not next episode, because one of the announcements we're going to talk about today is our new sort of show schedule, our new format. But I guess we'll get to that at the end.
Mm-hmm.
So at number five, I have Colin Molloy, lead singer of the Decemberists. Which probably might not be a surprise to any of you, since I've stated many times they're my favorite band. But what's interesting about this list and the way I chose these singers is, rather than picking people who most people would agree are, like, you know, classically good-sounding singers, and not to say that any of these guys are bad singers, although some people might debate me, like Lena, I like people with interesting voices. Not necessarily people who have, like, the best or the clearest, or, like, who are, like, classically trained singers. I like people who have interesting-sounding voices.
Yeah.
Which is why, like, some of my, one of my runners-up, which did not make it onto the list, but Billy Corgan.
Yeah.
Of Smashing Pumpkins. Like, not a great singer.
But interesting voice.
But he's a very interesting, like, it's distinctive.
Interesting timbre.
Yes, that was another criteria, was that it had to be distinctive. Like, you should be able to listen to that person's voice and immediately know who that is.
Yeah.
Which,
like, you listen to, what's his name? It's not Norm MacDonald, but it's somebody else, Aaron Neville, and you immediately know what he sounds like.
I don't know what I love you.
See, that's distinct, you know.
Yeah.
No matter how much you want to get away from it, you never can, because you know who it is.
So
exactly.
All of the people who are on this list are people who I think have a very distinctive voice. And some other runners-up were Elton John. Cat Stevens, John Anderson of Yes, and Billy Joel.
Oh, wow. Billy Joel didn't make the cut?
It was really tough because I love Billy Joel. He's one of my favorite singer-songwriters.
He is out of the club.
But yeah, it's just like, for example, show tunes. Show tunes are Broadway singers. Like, yes, they're all amazing singers because they're trained. But a lot of them sound the same to me.
Well, I mean, mind you, this is your list, so this is in your opinion.
Right.
So we could sit here and argue it, but
right.
I mean,
or country, all male country singers sound exactly the same to me. I could not tell, if you played, Keith Urban, Hank Williams.
Johnny Cash.
Yeah, but I don't consider Johnny Cash straight-up country. He's, he transcends country.
Josh Turner?
I don't even know who that is.
Oh. He has a real, real low voice.
But if you played, Toby Keith, Keith Urban, Garth Brooks, if you played them, I wouldn't be able to tell you which was which.
You can definitely tell what's-his-name apart. He's really whiny, and he did, some songs for Cars. How his name was. Anyway, yeah, he's just really whiny, and I don't like him at all. But anyway, back to your list. Yes.
All right, number four, this is probably one that people have not heard of. This is an obscure one, but Peter Hamill. Peter Hamill is the singer of a band called Van der Graaf Generator, which was big in... I mean, big is a relative term, because even then it was an obscure band.
I was going to say, in memory serves correctly, you mentioned them in your prog rock episode, didn't you?
I did, but I didn't really talk about them at all. I just sort of mentioned the name, but I didn't explain who they're. So Van der Graaf Generator is basically, it's Peter Hamill. It's an outlet for his songwriting. The other musicians are just sort of there to play the songs in. But it's all him writing, playing. He plays a lot of instruments, plays piano mainly is his main instrument, but flute. Other stuff like that. But what's his most dynamic thing is his voice. I mean, his voice is insane because he can go within the same sentence. He can go from very soulful, I'd almost say crooning,
mm-hmm.
you know, a Dean Martin or one of those old, really old school.
Right. Sinatra, Dean Martin.
Yeah. And just very smooth, very really pleasant, but then he within the same beat he can go to this crazy a shriek almost
like what kind of shriek are we talking
I could play a song for you real quick. I could play a couple seconds of it.
Okay.
It's cracked, smashed and bursting over you. There was no reason to expect such disaster. Drowning, you know, you care for nothing and no one but yourself, and would deny even this hand which stretches out towards you to hell.
Are we talking darkness level shriek or what?
No, not maybe shriek wasn't the right word, but it's just he gets high pitched. And he's very theatrical.
Ah, okay.
In the way he sings. So he's all over the place. I'm trying to think of another person who might fit this description.
Bette Midler?
No. think of someone who has really dynamic range, and gets really, really energetic when they sing.
I would see.
There's
the lead singer from The Darkness is what I'm thinking.
Yeah, but that's a falsetto. This is
Darkness mostly has falsetto. He's talking about just pure range. You can go the highest of the highs and the lowest of the lows. I'm thinking there's one guy in Rent that has he's really. I think it's the black guy.
Yeah, he it's funny. I talked about Broadway singers and I don't really like them all and that they sound the same to me. But actually, Peter Hamill could easily be a character in a Broadway show because he could be the hero, he could be the villain. He's got a really dynamic voice.
I know who, and it's from left field too. Systems of the Down singer, lead singer.
Yes, thank you. That is actually a great
there
example.
You go.
That is a great
left
example.
Field.
Serge Tankian.
That's something.
Pretty sure that's a name. Yeah, because he can go from really low.
Yeah, and you see, listen to some of the songs Roulette. It's just kind of really low, blah, blah, blah. And then some of the other songs he gets really up there, and with some of these crazy stuff
Aerials. He can go Aerials. Really low, but then. Yeah. So thank you. That I was really struggling to come up with a good analogy, and that's a perfect one. But the music is very interesting too. Like, the songs are really, really long and really crazy, and they might make you go insane by how weird they get. But he's an amazing singer.
You mean by how awesome they get? Yeah.
Number three, Peter Gabriel. Peter Gabriel, lead singer of Genesis and also successful solo artist, his voice was so iconic, at least in the world of progressive rock, but in music in general.
I wouldn't pigeonhole it strictly to prog rock. Because we came around after prog rock had really just died out.
Well, Peter Gabriel definitely had mainstream success. He's huge. But where I would say his influence as a singer was most profound was in the world of progressive rock. Because there are so many bands where the singers try to emulate Peter Gabriel's voice. Like, a very good example one is this band called Marillion, which was taken from the word Silmarillion, like the Lord of the Rings would
call it,
which is pretty nerdy. And the lead singer chooses to go by Fish. Like, that's his name. It's Fish.
Fish is in PH Fish?
No, just Fish. Like,
Fish is in regular.
Yeah. And he's Scottish. But when he sings, he sounds like almost exactly like Peter Gabriel. And I think that's clearly intentional. There's another band called IQ where the singer also is trying to sound exactly like Peter Gabriel. Like, in progressive rock, everybody tries to sound like Peter Gabriel. Number two, and this was hard. It was a hard choice between number one and number two for this one. But Freddie Mercury.
Yeah.
I mean, that's almost a no-brainer. Like,
he has just, his voice had range, and it had a, he could hold a, his timbre could hold a note, and it can give it the right vibrato to it. So it didn't sound like overly vibrato like most like opera does.
Yeah.
But he bridged towards it. He kind of like pointed to the vibrato, but he didn't like stay on it. That's why I really liked about his voice.
Well, not only that, let's also not shirk away from the fact that without his voice, we would not have some of the greatest songs the last 30 years.
Right.
And the Gremlin would not be a made famous car without the song Bohemian Rhapsody.
Exactly.
Absolutely.
I mean, Bohemian Rhapsody, Fat Bottom Girls, Another One Bites the Dust, We Are the Champions.
We Will Rock You.
We Will Rock You. I mean,
Under
two
Pressure.
Sports movies.
Vanilla Ice wouldn't have been famous if it wasn't for Under Pressure.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And speaking of Under Pressure, David Bowie was another
honorable mention.
Another honorable mention. But Freddie Mercury not only is an amazing singer, but he's an amazing frontman. Like, mm-hmm. he brings so much charisma mm-hmm. to his performance, which is why I almost had to put him in. You know what? I'm actually...
Charisma.
This is the first, because normally I don't edit these lists after I've already written them. But now that we're talking about him, he's got to be at number one.
It's a shame because we lost Freddie Mercury in the 80s, and
there's this guy from Canada. He's a Christian rock singer, and they got him to replace him. I'll show it to you at some point later. He sounds almost exactly like Freddie Mercury.
You played that guy for me, and I was gonna say though that I talked about how a lot of singers emulate Peter Gabriel, right? You don't hear anybody trying to sound like Freddie Mercury because no one can.
Very
few exceptions. No one tries to because it would just be too freaking hard to try and do what Freddie
Mercury
does.
You have to remember, you may be a great singer, but he's Freddie fucking Mercury.
Freddie fucking Mercury.
you ain't topping Freddie fucking Mercury.
No, you can't top him. He's
he took us. Okay, he was in a gay man in a band called Queen, wearing mustache and leather pants. And everyone, like, I don't care if you're straight, gay, asexual, I don't care who you
are. Women wanted him, men wanted to be him, and some men wanted him too.
And he wanted them.
And he wanted them, but that's besides
most
the point.
Most men wanted
Not that
him.
There's anything wrong with that.
I mean, can you
most
think...
Most men wanted.
I can't think of too many other, like, gay icons like that who, even straight people, like, cannot bash Freddie Mercury.
I was going to say, I can't think of many, you know, male singers... in music history, who have been more charismatic than Freddie Mercury?
He's awesome.
I mean, definitely one of the more popular British singers, if not the most popular British singer.
He definitely, watching some live tapes, he definitely puts on a really awesome live show. Mm-hmm. And he's hopping around the entire time. Mm-hmm. Like, that's really hard to do.
Right.
To keep up all that energy, especially with these big stages and these arenas that they're selling out.
Right. I mean, Queen in general is amazing because they're all classically trained musicians. And they could have, you know, they could have done really pretentious, serious work, but instead they decided to make music that was fun and appealed to everyone, and that's why I'm not even going to say who my other one was. Freddie Mercury gets two slots. He's
really?
Number one and number two. I'm not even bothering saying the other one because he's that amazing.
He's so good.
I'll go with that.
The other one I was going to say was Greg Lake, who I've talked about many times before.
Yes, Emerson, Lake, and Palmer. And Greg Lake does have a great voice, but if it was going to come...
But he doesn't have the range, or is certainly not the stage presence of Freddie. Like,
all right, but
that's why I took him off and just gave Freddie Mercury two slots, because it almost seemed like, I don't know, sacrilegious to put them right next to each other, because in terms of impact...
Let's not sell Greg Lake short. Greg Lake has got a great voice.
Yeah.
But you are right that he doesn't have the stage presence, and he's got range... But he just doesn't have the memorable voice that Freddie Mercury does.
Right. I mean, I still put him really high because in addition to having an amazing voice, he's also, you know, he's also an amazing guitar player, bass player, where Freddie Mercury didn't play any instruments, but he didn't need to.
Freddie Mercury didn't need to.
Freddie Mercury
play
is an instrument of God.
Yes.
What?
Sorry.
That voice? Come on, man.
So, yeah, that's...
Yeah, he is. He is. He
that's
is amazing.
My top five... For this week, and
awesome.
As Colin said, next week I'll have my top five female singers.
All right.
So I'll kick it over to you now.
Okay.
All right.
All right, so.
As a time for that theme song, you can do, and I'm going to turn this up here, make sure it doesn't burst your sound buttons.
Yeah. Well, go ahead and get us prepped on what you're going to talk about, and then
I was
going to
say, since this is close to Halloween, ladies and gentlemen, my top 10 list this week is going to be horror movies. Now, go ahead.
Hi, it's time for movies. Top 10.
All right.
We always had to hear from Harry Carey.
No,
yeah.
Well, I had to be honest here. Now, most horror movies these days just aren't scary. They suck, really. And to be perfectly frank, the movies that I once thought were frightening, I mean, most of them have become campy and ironic at this point.
Right.
But there are movies that every so often, if I'm sitting there and it's a dark night and I have the lights off and the only light source is coming from the television of the movie I'm watching, I'll still get a jolt, you know? There are occasions, I will admit. So I'm going to go ahead and I'm going to give the honorable mention first because I'll give the honorable mention last.
Okay.
Only because I wanted to go ahead and start this list. Okay. Number 10, Saw.
Yeah.
Saw, the first time I saw it.
I can't stand that series now, but... I can't deny it, the first movie was.
The first movie
really
is really the only one
important.
Worth mentioning, let's be honest. Cary Elwes and the other dude, I can't remember the actor's name for the life of me. I mean, they just play that, you know, position of a person who is running out of choices. It's either, you know, they have to sacrifice certain elements of their livelihood or they're going to die.
Yeah, I mean, it had the Dread Pirate Roberts in it, so.
Yeah, I mean, that's already a win in its favor. So, I mean, obviously, those of you who have been around the last 20 years of horror, you've probably seen Saw and probably most of its sequels.
And
but
all the parodies of it.
Yeah. But remember, Saw is the one worth mentioning. Because, I mean, it probably is the superior of all of the films.
Yeah, I mean,
it's probably the most original horror film to come out in a while.
Yeah. It's just unfortunate that it suffered from the same fate that every other popular horror movie does, which is that they just made too many of them. It started going downhill. They couldn't keep up with ideas.
Well, they couldn't keep up with ideas, and really, they just... Hollywood basically just beat it to death.
Yeah.
I mean, I think we were on Saw 7 when it finally ended, and they're still talking about possibly making more.
It's something where they get a lot of money out of it. They get so much. It's because of these, tweens and prostitutes go out with each other and you want to go see the scary, you know,
go
violent
see the scary
movie
so that they cuddle on the
yeah. It's a date movie.
It's a date movie. It's basically McDonald's breeding. It's That's all it is.
Yeah, that's really scary when the McDonald's.
McDonald's prostitutes.
Yeah,
but it's
goes down the mouth so smooth.
My rule is that whenever as soon as a horror movie franchise has four or more movies, it only exists to be made fun of.
Yeah, pretty much.
It's no longer a legitimate series.
All right. Well, number nine is definitely one of those movies that it's not billed as a horror film, but good God, if you think about it, it's scary. And that is 2001: A Space Odyssey.
Yeah, I would definitely agree.
I mean, most people would classify that as a sci-fi film. Well, first and foremost, it's a Kubrick film. I don't care what Kubrick film you watch. They're all scary.
They're nuts.
Clockwork Orange,
Dr. Strangelove, there are elements I'll laugh at, but
it's still a scary thought, like the premise of the movie.
Well, I mean, it's a scary thought because even though it's almost 50 years later, you still think, God, people are this stupid. This could actually happen.
Yeah.
So, but 2001 is especially scary because it's technology evolving to the point where it perceives that humanity is the flaw in all things and basically decides to eliminate the flaw of the system.
And it was very dreamlike, which most movies try to emulate, because that's pretty much where one of the basic reasons why we go to the movies. It uses like this wide-angle lens, like extremely wide angles Kubrick's been known for, especially in 2001.
Yeah.
And it gives this unnatural feeling that you have. It's kind of like this watching this big, huge globe, and you can see everything, and it just kind of it freaks some people out.
Oh, God, the monotone of Hal's voice.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't care who
I'm
you
sorry,
are.
I'm sorry, Dave. I cannot do that.
Exactly. If you heard Hal and he was like, I'm going to fucking kill your ass, you'd
the OG GLaDOS.
Yeah.
The original GLaDOS.
Yeah, exactly. Like, it's pretty much GLaDOS, but 80 times scarier. Like, GLaDOS is scary, but without Hal, GLaDOS would just be like...
GLaDOS is like a Seinfeld compared to him.
It's just a shame. Dave. That in today's day and age, the way Hollywood is now, they would never. There's not going to be another movie like that because they're never going to put out a movie that slow paced anymore.
Which is
no,
sad.
No, because everything's just snap snap.
Yeah, everything has to be fast. Yeah. And
speaking of which, what's the next one?
Next one is what was that? So number eight. I'm gonna be honest. This one, it's been a while since I've seen it.
Right.
But this one's still. This one used to scare me when I was a kid. The Exorcist.
Wow.
I have a few things to say about The Exorcist.
I mean, it's... I will admit, now it doesn't scare me because I've seen it 100 times.
And you know the effects. And...
Yeah. But, I mean, when I was when Reagan's head started spinning around, it scared the living
shit
out
of me. Right, so that's one thing, which is that it's one of those movies that's been parodied so many times. The original, it has just almost been ruined a little bit just because there's been so many spoofs of it. And I personally never found it scary at all, just because from my religious beliefs, it's like I don't even believe in the concept of hell or the devil or any of that stuff, so it's like it's not scary. Just to go on a little bit of a tangent real quick, I'm not gonna get, like, the way I worked as a kid, the things that scared me, the things that didn't, is really odd, because the things that scared me are the things that I'm like, oh, that could happen to anyone, like that could happen to the average person. The things that didn't scare me are like anything that was, like, in a specific time or place. So, for example, Nightmare on Elm Street never scared me because I know, stay the fuck away from Elm Street. Just don't go to Elm Street, you'll be fine. Like, Friday
I'll never sleep again. There. Problem solved.
It's located in Baltimore.
Yeah,
side note, stay the fuck away from Baltimore. There you go.
Yeah.
Problem solved.
You know, Friday the 13th. Just stay in on Friday the 13th. Don't go out.
Watch something on Netflix. That's not a horror movie.
Or watch a horror movie that's just ridiculous, like Mega Shark versus Giant Octopus.
Right.
Or Gatoroid.
Gatoroid.
Yeah, or like Godzilla. Well, that's not a horror movie, but it's like, I don't need to worry about Godzilla because just don't go to Tokyo. You know. But the things that did scare me. Or Texas Chainsaw Massacre. That's a good one because I know people are like,
just don't pick up hitchhikers.
Stay away from Texas. Just stay out of the state of Texas.
And don't pick up hitchhikers.
I just said don't go to Texas at all. The entire state of Texas.
Well, no.
And for the record, I've never been to Texas. Hitcher. Oh yeah, or any of those movies. Don't
well, you would stay away from Austin City Limits, which is kind of something that you would look forward to because it's independent music.
Yeah, but the movies that did scare me, the birds, because birds are fucking everywhere. You can't escape birds.
My sister, like...
You know the bird is the word.
Don't.
Oh.
Don't. Shut it down.
Yeah. Hey, no.
Do I need to hit you with the comic book again?
No, no.
It's like, birds are scary because there's birds everywhere.
My sister, actually, my sister saw that movie. Still will not go anywhere near our seagull.
Good.
She fucking hates those goddamn things.
They're rats with wings, you know.
Yeah. She hates birds. She hates them.
Yeah, fuck birds.
Yeah. All right. Anyway.
And then just the other, and then another one, anything with a killer doll.
Yeah.
Anything where puppets come to life. And because like every like, I've got toys. I've got puppets. Like, well, I don't have puppets, but like I have action figures. Anything where a toy comes to life. Is
okay.
Scary.
So anyway, all right. So yeah, Exorcist used to scare me. Doesn't really anymore. Number 7, Halloween, the original Halloween. Now, this was at a time where those sort of movies were becoming commonplace. You had Friday the 13th, you had Nightmare on Elm Street. Halloween was scary in the sense that, well, first you had the killer, who was like 7 feet tall, had a white mask, absolutely no features. I mean, with Jason, you had the hockey mask, which is just naturally imposing. But
right.
His mask was completely formless.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So it's... You like just trying to describe it.
It contained the emotion of mystery.
Yes, and of course it had Jamie Lee Curtis, and that's scary enough as is as well.
Right.
So I mean, obviously, me describing it's not going to do it. So go see the movie.
Spoiler: she turns into a man.
Question.
Well, that
from
was,
a man.
Yeah, yeah. She turned to a woman from a man.
Question: what would you say is the scarier Jamie Lee Curtis related? Film Halloween or the scene in True Lies where she has to do the sexy things.
True Lies. True Lies by far.
What about Trading Places?
No, True Lies.
It's True Lies.
True Lies
by a landslide.
True Lies by far. She has to try and look far sexier when she's older.
Yeah.
It doesn't work.
And she wasn't exactly winning the pageants when she was young, so.
Yeah, I know. But it's even worse when she's old.
I know.
Okay.
I'm sorry, Jamie. We stole it.
Yes. Anyway, number 6, Aliens.
Yeah.
Oh,
hell yeah.
Yes.
Aliens. I only put Aliens at number 6 because Aliens doesn't scare me anymore. It scared the living shit out of me when I was a kid.
I get nightmares just by looking at the cover after, you know, after that, watching that movie.
Yeah, when I was a kid, that movie, I actually, the first time I saw that movie, I didn't sleep for 2 days. I stayed up. I was like, no.
I watched the movie the spring, and then I went to, when that summer, I went to the ride.
Huh.
Scared the crap out of me.
Yeah. And the only reason it's lower is because, I mean, that movie was less about horror and more about action.
Yeah.
And that's fine. It still had its elements of horror.
And people almost forget the director of that movie.
James Cameron.
So
yeah.
I just want to say, the reason I love Aliens so much is because they were designed by H.R. Giger.
Mm-hmm.
And I actually have an entire, right here, I have an entire folder of art by H.R. Giger because I love H.R. Giger so much. Look at any one of these pictures and tell me that they are not freaking terrifying. Like, that's why the aliens are so scary. Like, no other movie has ever managed to have aliens as well designed as the ones in that movie. Like, every single one of those pictures will give you, like, haunt the shit out of your dreams.
I think the hunger face, just yeah. Some creepy crawly that can just jump on your face and
yeah,
then,
the face like, huggers
and,
oh.
And implant you.
Yeah, it's
basically have sex with your
yeah, what? Basically. And
your face.
What the fuck is that? What is that?
It's ladies' legs.
How would you describe that?
That's
and
a,
I'm gonna say this much: the only reason. I'll say this much. The reason why it's lower on the list, besides the fact right. that it's more of an action movie, is because, I'm not going to lie, the last about 10, 15 minutes where Sigourney Weaver is, like, ripping shit up with, like,
right.
the machine
yeah.
gun
That's
and
my
the
favorite.
Flamethrower, I got to admit, I have a massive erection every time I watch that part.
She's easily the most badass female character in any movie ever.
I'm going to go ahead and say that. I'm going to go on record and say that she's probably the most badass female character in any movie ever.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, seriously. I mean, she doesn't look all that good, but still.
Oh, no. I mean,
bam!
Who cares? She will destroy you. All right, next one.
Next one. Next one is number 5, Night of the Living Dead, the original Night of the Living Dead.
OJ.
Only because, I mean, like, seriously, the black dude.
Like, yeah. God, that's so, so.
He defies the odds and is the last one in the fucking movie. And what happens? They kill him.
Fucking police.
They kill him. And they
pulled LL Cool J, but didn't
fuck
happen.
The police.
No, and the stupid thing is, they killed him. And they were like, well, what if he's... And literally, they had this conversation. He's, like, waving his hands, like, hey, I'm here. And they're like, hey, Sarge, what if he's alive? Better not risk it. Blam.
Yeah.
Really?
By the way, this movie's, like, what, 40 or 50
yeah,
years
this was,
old?
Yeah,
so we don't even
this
need
was
to
Romero's
do a spoiler
first
alert.
Film, if memory serves correctly.
Yeah.
So, and it spawned, I mean, a massive
endless,
series.
endless films spawned from this movie. I mean, the whole zombie
yeah,
genre.
A comic book that leads to a series known as The Walking Dead.
Yeah. But, I mean, to be
amazing.
Honest,
amazing
I've seen...
Series.
I've
so
seen,
good.
See, the thing is, I've seen The Walking Dead. I've seen Dawn of the Dead. I've seen Shaun of the Dead. I've seen a lot of,
a lot of dead.
Zombie
I've
movies.
Seen a lot
but
of dead.
Honestly... That movie still resonates more with me than any of those.
Yeah.
Well, because it's the original.
Unfortunately, I'm afraid that the younger generations probably not going to appreciate it as much
yeah,
as us because they
it.
Won't watch anything that's black and white.
Well, that's because any teenager that was raised after, 1989 is basically anytime he sees a shotgun blow off a limb, he's just going to get a chubby.
Right.
at least
he can't understand the subtlety and the pacing of an actual zombie film.
At least a semi-chub.
Yeah, at least a semi-chub.
All right, next one.
All right, so let's see. That was number 5. Number 4. This one Justin was disagreeing with me on, but I still, to this day, I still get a little scared at this movie. Event Horizon.
What? That movie sucks. That's all I'm going to say.
No, it's. I'll admit, it's a
just
shitty movie.
Just threw up my mouth a little bit.
Dude, come on. Sam Neill scares the living shit out of me in that movie.
Tasty.
Because he starts out so normal,
I mean,
so
there's
timid.
Some, there's some freaky shit. I mean, people
well, yeah.
eyes bleeding from their eyes, sockets.
Well, and then, he goes all Hellraiser, and, his literally his entire body just goes inside out. I'm like, what the
yeah.
fuck
like
is
in,
that?
Like in the 1986 The Thing.
See, I saw The Thing.
It was just a bad movie, though.
It
could have been great.
I agree. It's a bad movie. But it's not bad because, it's bad because of the sci-fi elements, not bad because of the acting.
I mean, whatever. This is your list.
Well,
it doesn't hold up.
Yeah, I mean, now, there are still moments in that movie where I still get freaked out.
Yeah.
I'll admit.
So it does its job.
Yeah, so it still does its job. Number 3 is Friday the 13th, the original Friday the 13th.
Yeah.
For two reasons. One, it's still the only Friday the 13th movie where I'm still I'm rooting for the good guys. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I'm rooting for the ditzy teenagers.
I feel like if I'm going to watch dumb bitches get slaughtered at a camp, I'll just watch Sleepaway Camp. It's way more entertaining.
Well, and the second reason, it's got my favorite death in a horror film ever.
Which one?
Basically, Kevin Bacon is lying on the top of a bunk bed waiting for his girlfriend to get back in the shower, and Jason's mom stabs him through the neck with an arrowhead.
Oh, wow.
She has an arrow, and just and you just see the arrow go right through his neck. I'm like, win. That is a win.
FTW.
And now you can add arrow to your 6 points of Kevin Bacon.
Yay. That's good news for me.
Well, yeah, I mean, you could use Kevin Costner. Kevin Costner did what? You can make it work. Number 2, going back to
were
the
you about to play 6 Degrees of Kevin Bacon and just gave up on it?
No, we don't have enough time.
We don't
because
have time for that.
I know.
Oh, yeah, we don't.
He can figure it out.
I know, I'm just joking.
Number 2, Alien. The original Alien. This movie still does scare the shit out of me.
It does, because it's paced well. It is, especially the dinner table scene.
John Hurt.
Oh my gosh.
Oh, John Hurt. Oh, that bit.
I have to stop the movie. I have to go to Spaceballs in order to gratify myself and keep myself from having nightmares. I have to go to the Spaceball scene at the end where he goes, "I'll have the special."
Oh no!
What did
not
he have?
Again.
The special.
I'll have the soup.
Yeah.
Yeah,
hello,
and it's funny
hello,
because
hello, darling, hello, my ragtime
kid. Well, and the funny thing is, John Hurt was in Alien. he's the one who got the facehugger
right.
exploding out of his chest. And then he went back in Spaceballs and basically did the exact same thing.
Not again.
Oh, no.
It's not again. It's 11.
Well, and the funny thing is, here's the thing. You look at him in both of those movies. He was 30. He looked like he was 60 then.
Oh, wow.
Well, I mean, he looked old, but he was like only in his like late 20s, early 30s. All right, so now we come to my number one scary movie.
Number one.
And it's Stephen King's The Shining.
Yours, Johnny?
Okay.
Oh, yeah, we're talking Jack Nicholson goes off the fucking deep end. It's not...
That's good crazy.
Oh, yes.
If you watch in the correct mode, 5 Easy Pieces and then The Shining...
Like, no, seriously, it is one of those movies where if you're in the right setting, it's the right time, everything that man does in that movie, you'll piss your pants. He still scares the living shit out of me to this day.
Yeah, I mean, Jack Nicholson is scary when he's trying to be, like...
Normal.
So when he's actually trying to be scary...
What do you mean, I'm trying to be normal?
You're done. Like, you're game over, man.
I know,
game
right?
over.
Bill Paxton should be, like, game over about Jack Nicholson. Jesus. forget. But yeah, seriously, The Shining. I don't even need to describe it. It's been around for 30 years. Go rent the DVD.
It's the only good Stephen King film that there is.
Yeah, it's the only good Stephen King horror film ever made.
Green Mile was vegetable.
Yeah, okay, that's not true. A horror. I forgot film. Green. Oh yes, it's the only good.
Not a horror like, film.
Stephen King.
That is true. Horror. That's
so.
It.
I'm,
so
that's
what would
I'm
you...
saying. That's what we're okay. saying. Shining, the only good Stephen King yeah. horror film.
And Hearts in Atlantis was actually pretty decent, but no one saw it.
Okay, so...
But it's the only good one.
In summation...
But, and now I gotta give my honorable mention.
Oh, yes.
This honorable mention, the only reason we didn't put it in there is because it's only 5 minutes of a particular movie.
Come with me.
But let's be honest, this 5 minutes of this particular movie is scarier than most of the horror movies that have come out in the last 10 years. And that is the boat scene from Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory. The original Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory.
Everyone forgets its creepiness.
Yeah, Gene.
Oh,
like,
no
that,
one,
that scene,
no one,
that
no
scene is scarier than most horror
no,
movies
you're
now.
You're thrown off at first. You're watching There's that magical no moment where, you know, they're just gone through the, you know, they've gone through
which
the thing.
Which direction
and,
we are going? Is the ship raining? Is it snowing?
Yes. The danger must be growing, for we don't know which way we are rowing. And the rowers show no sign of slowing.
Okay.
Yeah, seriously. I mean, honestly, I can describe that scene 100 different ways, but anybody who's seen that movie, you know what we're talking about. And quite frankly, you know it scares the shit out of you. But it doesn't really scare me more than any of those movies. That's why it's only an honorable mention.
Yeah.
But still, it's still a scary moment.
And Nostalgia Critic has talked about it. Right. Everyone's talked about that scene.
But it's like, you know, you've seen it, but it's in the last place you'd expect it.
And then never talked about again.
And then never mentioned again, exactly.
All right, I'm going to kill this music.
Well, that's fine, because guess what? I'm done.
You're done. You've done all your right. top 10. It's time to wrap up the show.
Yes, so one last thing we do got to talk about before we wrap up tonight. The new format that we're discussing.
Yes. So.
Ooh. You changed
it's
your
not
format.
So much a new format as just a new schedule for the show. So we are going to give you, the listeners, 2 shows a week now.
Oh, jeez.
That's
oh,
right.
Oh, no.
But. The shows will be shorter, so rather than doing 1 hour-and-a-half show a week, or hour and 20 minutes, we are doing 2 30-to-45-minute shows.
Yeah, so basically what's going to happen is, at the beginning of the week, we're still, it's basically still going to be movies and music in one episode, but what we're going to do is, we're going to do reviews in our first episode of the week, and then we're going to save our top 5 and top 10 list for the second episode of the week.
So, but this time we put them both in one thing. So this is the probably
this will
one,
be this will be the
last
episode
time.
in the old format we have become accustomed to, that you've become you as a listener have become accustomed
yeah,
to.
Yeah. So the schedule probably be one on, should we say, Sunday.
I say we'll probably release the first episode on Sunday. And
second
then,
episode probably in the middle of the week.
Probably around Wednesday on hump day.
Yeah, because we generally record
to get you to the end of the week.
Because we record these over the weekend.
Yes. And we also record these on the weekend, so. And then one last thing we gotta mention before we go, because we got the light coming on. We gotta mention that we are getting our first live event, Halloween Alt-Com.
Alternative commentary.
Yes, it's going down this weekend, October 22nd, at the Haven. Now, what we're going to be doing is basically very similar to Mystery Science Theater 3000. We're going to roast a really bad movie. Just because, quite frankly...
Well, actually, two. A clip of one, just because we couldn't get... Because when we originally watched it, there was some really good material in there. Unfortunately, the movie was way too ridiculous because it just basically made fun of itself.
Yeah, basically...
That movie is Killer Clowns from Outer Space.
Yeah, basically, we only could get 5 minutes of material out of Killer Clowns from Outer Space.
They're a good 5 minutes.
They're good 5 minutes, but it's only 5 minutes, so basically...
And it's all at the beginning, so.
Yeah. Yeah. So, and then what we're going to do for the main event is we're gonna roast The Lost Boys, starring Keith Sutherland.
I'm really looking forward to that, and it's funny because I can't forget it. I forget
both
who Corys. It was, but someone was like, you can't make fun of The Lost Boys. That's a classic. I'm like, what are you smoking?
someone actually told you.
And take care of that list.
Wait. Someone actually told you you couldn't make fun of The Lost Boys?
Some girl told me.
Oh. Okay, that's a girl.
It was a girl.
Wait, okay, that makes sense.
Did you
sense
go to the salon again?
Yeah, that's why I was getting my mani pedi.
Your mani pedi.
We were talking about. I was talking about this event with the ladies there. Uh-huh. And one of them looks over at me and says, "You can't make fun of the Lost Boys. That's a classic. Am I right, ladies?"
Girl, she made fun of Lost Boys. Tina, did you hear what he make fun of?
I was not going to the one downtown.
Oh, okay. Did you hear the one that he's making fun of? Okay.
So, I then just...
Anyway.
I shook my head, muttered, bitches are dumb, and moved on.
Anyway, but, like, seriously, Alt-Com's going to be great. $5 gets you in, gets you food, drink, and entertainment.
Yes.
Costume contest... Winner of the who has the best costume will win. Will actually get a collection of horror DVDs.
Yes,
a whole crate of these things.
Whole crate of them. But we got to give a shout out to BNS Reviews,
may not actually be a
who are our partners in the Alt-Com event.
Yes, and you can check us out at bandsreviews.podomatic.com and then email us at bandsreviews@gmail.com.
Good, they got their weekly plug-in.
Yes.
Anyway. So check that out. It starts at 8. We're going till midnight. If you need information about where the event is, please don't hesitate to look up the Facebook event or go to Boldly Going Nowhere at Facebook. You can find us on Facebook there.
Yeah. Due to the nature of the location, we can't just give you the address.
We can't reveal the address
on the air, but we'll
on the air, but we will gladly give you
the MPAA. You know, rules.
Well, that and the fact that the owners have wished us to keep the location secret.
Yes.
Yes.
We got plenty of space, bring friends.
Like I said, food, drink available.
We at BS are going to release the Alt-Com, the audio from Lost Boys. So it's going to be synced up. And
oh, good.
So you can sync it up at your home player and you can have an audience. And us comment with
oh, okay, so we're actually going to have it recorded.
That's why it's called alternative commentary.
We'll give you instructions on how to sync it up with the movie so that you can start our episode and start the movie.
We'll say like 3, 2, 1 from the DVD menu or from the Netflix, instant stream.
And that way you'll be able to bring the Halloween Alt-Com experience home.
Yes.
Yeah.
Just without our smiling faces.
No. So if you can't make it to the live event, you can still get a part of that Alt-Com goodness.
And there will be photos posted.
Yes.
Photos and videos of the costume contest.
Exactly. Both on the BNS website and also on our own.
Yep.
Okay. Well, that wraps up this episode in the old format. So.
Yeah. That's.
As usual.
I'm Justin Eisenstadt.
I'm Colin Kakamas.
And I'm Sean Holmes.
And we are Boldly Going Nowhere.
Outro.
Boldly Going Nowhere is a Los Tres Monos production. For more podcasting goodness, check us out at boldlygoingnowhere.podomatic.com.
Check out my podcast, BNS Reviews, at bnsreviews.podomatic.com.
Or if you're into the social networking scene, look up either BS Reviews or Boldly Going Nowhere Podcasts at Facebook or Twitter.